Welcome to the Divorce Comeback Coach Podcast. I'm your host, Heidi B., certified and trauma-informed divorce coach, professional planner, and go-to gal for navigating the next steps of your divorce journey. I'm so happy you've tuned in for the tools, topics, and truth talk to start transforming your life today. I truly believe that there are no setbacks in life, only set-ups for epic comebacks. So without further delay, let's continue creating your comeback today. Hey, hey, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. My guest today is the incredible Dr. Melissa McCreary. Dr. Melissa McCreary is a psychologist, emotional eating expert, author, host of the Too Much on Her Plate podcast, and the creator of Your Missing Piece, the program that supports smart, busy women in creating freedom from overeating and peace with food. She has helped thousands break cycles with overwhelm, overload, and overeating without feeling deprived and without depending on ridiculous amounts of willpower. Participants in her signature program, Your Missing Piece, lose their cravings and their overeating habits. Dr. McCreary's approach to helping working mothers, busy professionals, and stressed out business owners emphasizes leveraging your unique strengths, ditching diet mentality, and using the power of psychology. Her perspective has been featured in The Wall Street Journal, CNN Health, Weight Watchers Magazine, Good Housekeeping, Working Mother, Fitness, Women's Health, Real Simple, and Self. Welcome to the show, Melissa.
Thank you for having me, Heidi. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm so happy to have you. I was just telling you before we pressed record that this topic is very near and dear to my heart because I actually started out as a food and body coach prior to serving divorced women specifically. And it's interesting how so many of the tools that I've used in that space are not only relevant, but truly the very similar path to transforming through your comeback after divorce. And so I just believe that so much of our recovery comes from self-discovery. And after really struggling for over two decades with food in my body, body dysmorphia, a form of bulimia through exercise, and what I learned after going through my coaching certification and using transformational tools and breath work on my own body is that body image issues and insecurities played a massive, massive role in my divorce, but I never knew it or saw it at the time. So I can't wait to learn and have our listeners learn more about what you do and how you help. I would love for you to just share a little bit about your own personal journey and why this topic is so important to you. So I'll turn it over to you to share your story.
Yeah. And I'm going to actually go back to what you said a little bit. I'm sitting here looking at your title, right? Divorce Comeback Coach. And I love the idea of coming back. I think one of the reasons to kind of tie in your question with where we started, one of the reasons that I do what I do is because diet culture and the weight loss industry and the mentality that we develop around thinking about food and weight and our bodies and eating can be so sneaky that we don't even realize the ideas and the beliefs and the thoughts that we have absorbed about food, about weight, about what to use food for, about what we think is possible for ourselves. And over time, it steals our power. And we don't even know how powerless we feel. I work with smart high achievers who do incredible things in the rest of their lives, CEOs and attorneys and physicians and, you know, yes, blockbuster entrepreneurs. And they've got this area of their life where they're saying, why, how can I do everything else? And I can't figure this out, right? Mm. And so much of what I do to piggyback on what you were saying about the parallels is about helping women reclaim their power and find their power again. And in terms of my story, that is exactly why I do what I do, because I didn't know that before I became a psychologist, before I started doing this work, I had healed my own relationship with food. Like so healed it that it's not something I think about. It's not something I work with. It's not something that is even a part of who I am anymore in terms of it being a problem. And when I became a therapist who worked with women, I started hearing from all these experts that that wasn't what was being taught. that the possibility that you can come back, that you can be the one who has the power, that you can lose your cravings, that you can have a relationship with food that you love and meet your goals, that you don't have to always be trying to control it or manage it or, you know, fit yourself into some kind of box. People were not telling women that, and women didn't believe that. And so I love what you do. I love the word come back. And I think we have a lot in common in kind of the message that we share with women.
Thank you for that. That was so beautiful. And I absolutely love that you used one of my favorite words, which is reclaim. Because I truly believe that a comeback is a reclamation. It is a reclaiming of so many pieces and parts of yourself that you don't even realize that you've let go.
Yeah. Or have been taken from you.
Yeah. Ooh, can you say more about that?
You know, I feel like the weight loss industry, and to some extent the wellness industry, but really, let's just talk about people who tell you what to do with food.
Yes, that's a great way to put
it. It is one of the most archaic, old-fashioned, I feel like it's the only place that people who market themselves as sophisticated or having a sophisticated approach are still telling people, here's this thing that worked for me, or here's this thing that we believe works, make it work for you. Mm-hmm. Instead of honoring the reality that you are the only person who has lived inside your body your whole entire life. And also, I've been doing this work for long enough to be clear on exactly one thing. And that one thing is that there is no approach that works for everybody. Mm-hmm. That there is no one way of eating that is the ticket for everybody. And yet we are told this over and over and over again. And we're also told that if what you're trying hasn't worked, or if you haven't achieved your goal or that magical number on the scale, we are taught it is our fault. We are taught that we didn't try the thing hard enough, or we didn't apply it hard enough, or we didn't have enough motivation, or we were just too lazy, or we didn't have enough willpower. We are never taught, maybe this plan wasn't a fit for you. Maybe you deserve something better, right? And so reclaiming the fact that we are powerful and we are smart and we are capable, and if you are overeating, there's a reason this is happening, that shifts everything on its head and that changes the game completely.
Ah, that is so huge. There is a reason this is happening.
Yeah.
That gives you permission to start figuring out how to change the circumstances that you're sitting in, right? Because I think so often we just go, this is how it is. You know, my mom had this same body and she dealt with this her whole life too. And so, you know, I'm just going to have to fight the same way that she did, the same battle she did, and going to have to deal with the same things, and it's never going to go away. So I'll just kind of, but it's like, no, there's so much more around food and body than what's happening in our physical skin.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much more outside of that that is unspoken. It's really not discussed at all. And so I really, really love how you said, there's a reason. Let's figure out that reason.
And it is such a power tool, because think about it. If there is a reason, which there is, that you're eating, and every time we eat, there's a reason. Sometimes we need fuel. Sometimes we are tired. Sometimes we are bored. Sometimes we are stressed. Sometimes we want comfort. Sometimes we want a treat because nothing nice has happened to us all day long, right? There's always a reason. Once you know the reason, a lot of the time, sometimes at least, you have the power to, like you said, do something about the reason. And when you do that, think about how things change. This is how clients lose their cravings, right? They forget to binge. Mm-hmm. I have, there's a woman who was in my program last year. I have a 6-month program for creating freedom from overeating and breaking these patterns. And we were going over the things she had accomplished in the program, and she were talking about taking more time for herself, and she's less stressed, and she's less hard on herself, and all these things. And we have laughed about this because it was about like 2/3 of the way through this list, she kind of like sparked and said, I don't binge anymore. When I started the program, I used to binge every evening or most evenings. And now that I think about it, I don't do that anymore. And this is the power of taking your power back and realizing there's a reason this stuff is happening. Because when you deal with the reason, it's not you sitting around every evening like Jessica was, I will not binge. I'm not going to binge, right? I'm going to not go into the kitchen. It's that the reason's taken care of and you forget to go into the kitchen. You forget to think about the food, and your community has enough things to think about and worry about and be strong about and have discipline about. You don't need to be sitting on your hands to stay out of the kitchen or the potato chips.
Yeah.
It's too much.
It's too much. It's too much. I remember that point in which I stopped thinking about food all the time. And actually, it got to the point where I stopped thinking about it altogether. I only thought about it when my body actually was requesting that I have something, or when I was super duper stressed, the reason, right? Or when I wanted to numb out. But when I had started creating the awareness around the reason, I could go, oh, it's because I don't feel safe. It's because I feel sad. Mm-hmm. It's because I feel left out. It's because I don't want to work on another part of work today, right? Distractions. And it becomes very empowering to know what the reason is and how you used to respond. So you can start to respond in a different way that actually feels better. Mm-hmm. When I started finding ways to acknowledge how I was feeling and started feeling better, actually got to the root of, whoa, oh, it's this. I can actually let myself feel like that for a little bit. And once I let myself feel it, it doesn't like escalate it or make it worse, because I was always afraid it was going to make it feel worse.
I think what you're saying is so important, especially for people who are going through a life transition like divorce, because what I hear from a lot of people is, okay, so yes, I'm stress eating, but I can't do anything about the stress. So of course I'm stress eating. And there's a step that gets skipped there. We get taught to skip it. Our brains just naturally kind of gloss over it, which is compassion for what we're feeling. There are many times when if there was an easier solution to what we're doing than, you know, other than going for the chocolate, we'd do it. We're smart. Sometimes we can't. Sometimes we have, you know, we're caring for a loved one, or we are in the middle of a really messy transition and we can't control the other person, or, you know, the things are hard. But there is something so different about simply recognizing, like you were saying, I'm afraid, or I'm having a hard time, or I'm exhausted. And just owning that instead of trying to plow through it or feeling like you need to numb it out, or you shouldn't feel that way, or there's something wrong with you. And so you go for the giant container of cashews to try to push it, to push it down.
Mine was peanut butter. I don't know about you, if you've ever went through a peanut butter phase. I think some of our listeners might relate to this, but that peanut butter jar became my worst nightmare. When I was struggling with the relationship to food in my body, I was like, oh, that peanut butter, I thought that I could not trust myself with the peanut butter. And it was the peanut butter's fault for being so delicious that I would just take one scoop and then I would go sit down. And it was like the peanut butter would call, come get me, have another scoop. Okay. And I would just sit there, and instead of enjoying whatever TV show it was or the book that I was reading, I would sit there and try to talk myself out of going to the fridge one more time. And I remember one time I made myself sick on a bag of Hershey Kisses. It was like I had one, and then the next, I mean, so much to the point where I had to go to the doctor and they had to give me what they give colonoscopy patients because I had eaten so many Hershey Kisses. And those are real stories that I can kind of chuckle about, and I shouldn't even now, but it was like, I have so much compassion for that version of me years ago, where she just thought it was the peanut butter's fault. And she just thought she had a chocolate problem. And she just thought she didn't have enough willpower.
And she thought she couldn't trust herself.
Yes.
I'm so glad you brought that up, you know, because you go through these cycles of plans that don't work and things that are overly restrictive and that tell you just need to be stronger and have more willpower. And over time, you lose your confidence. Diets set you up to continually make promises that you cannot keep to yourself, right? Because they're based on willpower. And we have a limited supply of that. And most of us are using it up in a lot of different areas of our life. So particularly at the end of the day, when overeating and emotional eating are the worst for so many women, it is used up. So we are taught that the key to success is keep making all these unrealistic promises that we can't keep to ourselves, break them, which is inevitable. And by the way, makes the diet industry billions of dollars because yes, we are never successful. And then blame yourself when it doesn't work, you know, and now you're untrustworthy and now you're not strong enough and now you don't have enough self-control. It's horrible. It's just a horrible recipe.
It is a horrible recipe. Yeah. I love how you call out willpower, because I did a podcast called Willpower is Whack, because I just think that, and I like how you put it better than what I say, is like, it's not powering your way through. It's not that you don't have enough power, right? We're reclaiming our power. It's not that you don't have enough of it. It's just like, am I willing to look in the direction that I need to be looking, rather than distracting myself from what is? So I don't think it's a lack of willpower. I think it's sometimes just like, not realizing that it's the willingness to go, am I willing to feel sad? Am I willing to feel angry? Am I willing to feel disappointed? I know a lot of times I would turn to food when I felt disappointed. Like, oh, and it was a numbing agent. And I had a coach one time that told me, ask yourself when you go for the peanut butter, are you nourishing or are you numbing? And not just in a food level nutritional health, but are you nourishing your soul with that peanut butter? Is that going to turn off a part of you that's just going to freeze for a little bit? Because I think what I wanted to do a lot of times was just zone out, was escape, was not feel anything. And I know why I would drink bottles and bottles of wine. It was to numb out. It was like, I don't want to feel anything. And that wine would make me feel so numbed out, so checked out. To the point where it was just like, I think anytime that there's an emotion I don't want to feel, I'll just do that.
So I have a system that I teach my clients, back to that whole reason that we eat, which is the hidden hunger system. And there are some primary reasons that smart, busy women overeat and reach for food. Hidden hungers, things that we're really hungry for, that we are really needing, and that we're using food because we either don't get them, or we're too exhausted to go after them, or we don't believe we deserve them, or, you know, a whole host of other things. But when you are eating to numb out and to push things down, the default, I think, that we often tell ourselves is, well, that just means I need to be tougher. I need to be stronger. I need to face my feelings, right? And there is some truth to that, but I would actually adjust it a little bit, because most of the time, if you find yourself primarily eating to numb, if you take my hidden hunger quiz, what you are going to find is that you have a hidden hunger for compassion. That there is a real difference between, I need to face my fear. I need to be brave. I need to go in there and go into that courtroom and tell them what I really think. I need to ask for what I want. You know, there's that. There's a difference between that and compassion, which is, wow, I'm feeling frozen because I'm terrified, or I'm scared, or I'm afraid I won't be able to do this, or this is really hard, or I'm doubting myself, or starting from that place, compassion can circumvent or transform so much numbing. We often skip the compassion step when we're dealing with something that we think, I can't change it, so I just have to force it. I just have to be strong. That often gets us into more overeating.
I was going to ask you, what does it sound like? What are some of the things we would say to ourselves when we're trying to shift into a space of compassion? What would that sound like?
Oh, what a great question. You know, I think the first thing is what it doesn't sound like. It's not dismissing it. I shouldn't be scared. I shouldn't be tired. I don't have time to be worried about that. I need to make a decision, you know, if what you're feeling is scared to make a decision, right?
Yeah.
It's not harsh. Sometimes it sounds like, this is hard, right? This is hard, or this sucks. This is the worst day ever. You know what? That conversation with my boss was so awful. Like just letting it be. And if people have a hard time accessing that, I think about, you know, think about a time you've talked to a child who was miserable about something you couldn't change for them.
Yes. Right?
Maybe it's a situation at school, or maybe they're afraid of monsters under their bed, or maybe they just don't feel well. They're sick and they're going to have to miss a birthday party, or, you know, what do you do for them? You can't fix it, but you do things that make that child feel better. And yeah. Maybe it's just sitting on the stairs with them with your arm around them, right? But you don't just tell them to pretend it's not happening and buck up and be tough, you know, suck it up, buttercup. We don't do that. And I think that's a hidden hunger that gets lost a lot. And it's pretty important to talk about when you're going through tough things.
Yeah, that's such a beautiful thing. I feel like compassion for me is, it's what you just said in a different way. It's an acknowledgement, like mm-hmm. acknowledging what's happening to myself, like for myself, in like with love and light, like a light, yes. like a lightness. Yes. I think when I think of compassion, I just think of like something soft. Something mm-hmm. with care, with kindness, with love. So I love that you used like a younger child, like somebody mm-hmm. or a very good friend, somebody that you care about. Like, how would you talk to them when they were meeting themselves in this moment that doesn't feel very good?
Yeah.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. I think you already answered this, but I'm going to ask it again anyways, in case any additional golden nuggets come out. So,
no pressure.
Why? Well, and also I think just like more directly, why do we overeat? Are we just addicted to food? Like, what's going on? Why do we overeat?
Oh, for so many reasons, right? I mean, so many reasons. And we can talk about, it's so interesting. A lot of times people always want to talk about the chemicals in food that make us eat. And yes, yes, we live in a world where people make money engineering our behaviors and getting us to do things and getting us to want more of things and all of those pieces. And there are reasons, if you look at the life that you're living, there are some reasons that I think are very important to shine a light on that we kind of tend to dismiss. And that goes back to the hidden hungers I'm talking about. And they tend to go together. So exhaustion, stress, being too busy, a lack of time for yourself. Think about, you know, we use food to try to deal with all of these things, being too busy, wanting to avoid things because we've got these other hidden hungers. We're tired and we're stressed and we're too busy. And now somebody dumps a tough emotional situation in our lap. And we either don't know how to think about it, or we don't have the capacity to feel it, or we are just not in the mood to feel it. And so let's just eat that bag of chips and push it down and push it away, right? All of these things can feel like an impenetrable knot that come up, right? And most people say, oh my gosh, I have all these things. So it's overwhelming. I definitely need to be eating. And that is not the case.
Okay, it's time for a 10-second break to tell you about something great. Did you know that there's a community of divorced women who meet up virtually on a weekly basis and heal through divorce together? That's right. Our 12-week comeback community and group coaching experience provides the roadmap, the resources, and the relationships needed to navigate your new normal, create your comeback, and thrive after divorce. Take it from me. When you've got a plan and a partner in place, you'll be moving forward faster in no time. Visit divorcecomebackcoach.com and book your free clarity call with me, Heidi B., today and see if it's a fit. All right, let's get back to the show.
I'm sure that one of the things that you tell women in your program is that it doesn't have to be a big, huge, massive action to make a change, right? Small things can make a shift. And figuring out the reason that you're overeating should not add more overwhelm to your life. You don't need more of that. So starting to understand that it can be a complicated puzzle is important. And then the easiest path, I think, is I put together a quiz on my website that people can take, which will tell you, it doesn't matter if you have all the hidden hungers. What's your primary hidden hunger? You know, and where can you start? What is a simple thing you can start to do to shift the dynamic from, you know, moving one way to like untangling itself? Because what happens is these things move together and they build and they get worse and they become this cycle that feels like a hamster wheel. And so you really got to break out of that cycle if you want to find the peace and the freedom and the ease and your power again.
Yeah. I love that you continue to emphasize the word like smart women, professional women. It's not that you're dumb. It's not that you haven't figured out what's going on at all. Like, you are smart. These are things that are not talked about in mainstream society. And thank goodness there are folks like you who are bringing light to this, because it's the number, probably one of the number one thing that most women deal with is body insecurity. And all these things around it come from what you just, so many of the ways that you just shared. I like to tell my clients, what's your next best step?
Yeah.
Just the next best step. Don't think about all the things, just the next best step. So I love that your quiz really guides people in the direction of, okay, now that I have this awareness around this hidden hunger, now I can do something with it. And that's very empowering.
Yeah. Because again, when you do something about the reason the food doesn't call to you, it's you taking your power back and deflating the power, whatever that junk food, your favorite thing in your pantry is, you know, like you were talking about it, the peanut butter is calling to me. The peanut butter stops calling out.
I remember.
And you're not listening for it anymore, right?
I am telling you, I knew that I had really, really started honoring myself and caring for myself in a different way when I stopped dieting and I bought peanut butter again. And it sounds so silly, but the day I bought peanut butter again and I didn't hear it calling, I was so excited. I still feel it in my body telling you the story. I remember not even needing 2 tablespoons, like one serving is 2 tablespoons, just going and just taking one little scoop of it and thinking, this is so wonderful and delicious. And I really, really wanted it. And I'm so glad I'm having it. And that was it. And then I didn't have peanut butter for probably 2 weeks after that. It no longer had this grip on me, but I had figured out how to care for the needs that were asking for me. That's really what I found it to be, was I had all these requests inside of my body that were like, hey, pay attention, give me compassion, be nicer to me, give me a little break.
Yeah. Well, I often ask people, you know, especially busy women, and those of you who are listening, take a minute and really, I want you to answer this honestly. When is the last time you took a breath or two and just asked yourself, either what am I feeling, or what am I wanting, or what do I need? When's the last time you did it? Because you are not alone if it has been days or you don't have a clue. And it certainly probably hasn't been within the last hour. They're simple questions that can be really hard to answer if you're not used to asking them. They are simple questions to start asking and just letting your mind wonder about. But think about, if you accept what I truly believe, that there is a reason that you're eating, but you don't pay attention and you haven't been taught to pay attention, or you forgot to pay attention because you did when you were little, to how you're feeling and what you're wanting and what you're craving and what you're needing. If you don't have that muscle built in and you're not working that muscle, you can't respond to the reason. You're not present. And it's not your fault. We're not taught to be present. We're actually taught, I mean, my phone is right here, right? We are taught to be distracted every second of every day and to be doing 3 things at once, and certainly not to be just taking a deep breath and saying, what do I know about what I'm feeling? It is such an act of taking your power back.
That presence is huge. Presence was a huge part of my healing, because I was an overachieving, smart, busy woman, climbing the corporate ladder, overworking, over-traveling, overdoing so many areas of my life and not slowing down. And I think another reason why the peanut butter was calling was because there was so much noise. There was so much noise, whether it be everything and everyone around me or just the noise in my own mind. And I just wanted everything to just be quiet for a little while. Mm-hmm. And something happened when that peanut butter melted me. It like melted my brain as well. And it just, the noise didn't feel so loud. What I took away from that and when the peanut butter stopped calling is when I actually started understanding what it meant to be quiet. To be quiet, to not turn any devices on, to not turn any TVs on, to actually sit and be with myself. Or I started by being in motion. My coach called it like meditative walking. So I would just kind of walk and just kind of go inwards and slow down because she said, notice the pace of your steps. And even the steps on a leisurely, I lived in California at the time. On a leisurely beach walk, rapid. It was like I was rushing to, okay, I'm going to go down to the pier and I'm going to come back, right? And when I realized I was doing it, I'm like, oh, wow, I'm doing it. Even in my relaxing time, I'm rushing to finish. And so just being in a state of intentionally slowing down, and it took work. I mean, I really had to work at this, but that made the noise come down a little bit. By a little bit, and taking more time with myself to just be present with myself was a game changer. It wasn't everything. There were a lot of things that I worked on, but it was a big one.
We live in this culture that is do, 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 do. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? And when we feel a feeling that we don't like, our first thought, because of how we're wired, is what am I going to do to make it go away, to change it? What am I going to do? And I think there's a lot to be learned from sports psychology, well, sports medicine, people building strength or athletes building endurance. The strength and the improvement comes when you have doing and recovery.
Yes.
Doing and rest days. You know, you go and you lift the weights and then your muscles need time to rebuild. And if you skip the not doing parts, the doing doesn't work. We fall apart. People yes. get sick and your immune system falls apart and you don't build muscle and you don't run longer distances and you don't get to do the marathon. And it's the balance. Yeah. And we can't do if we never get to just be.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I love the questions that you are offering up. One of the ones that I use with my clients on a very regular basis is, what do I need most right now? And I can't tell you the number of times where the first couple of times when I ask, it's like, I don't know. But again, it's that rushed, busy thing. And when we slow down and we go into the body and maybe we do a little breath work, we work on presence together, right? Holding space and being there for one another. That question becomes more available. The answers become more available. And then we ask again with a little more softness, a little more compassion, what do I need most right now? What do you need most right now? And then it always sparks a little something, something. Well, maybe think I need this. Okay, let's talk more about that. And it just becomes this unfolding of this beautiful. So I love those questions that you just shared. They're so, so good and so helpful. What have you seen that gets in the most people's way? What really roadblocks them from overcoming all of this?
It's the conditioning that we have, like you've been talking about, and not having the support. And sometimes that's a community, and sometimes that's a coach, and sometimes that's both. But to help you see a different way or to help you know what you can't know because you don't know to look for it, to help you yeah. recognize your blind spots. This mm-hmm. whole area of our relationship with food has been hijacked in so many ways. If you are a woman in a society like the United States or, you know, similar, I've got women in my program from all over the world and it is the same thing. Our relationship with food has been hijacked in ways we don't even recognize. And so I use a lot of psychology, a lot of the psychology of change, a lot of high performance techniques that are used with high performance athletes and that kind of thing to help people step outside of, you're in a very closed system right now that is diet culture and deprivation thinking and diet mentality, and it doesn't work. And the problem is, one of the lies inside that system is, it'll work for you if you just work hard enough. If you just work harder, it'll work. And think about what happens if you're in a cycle that has no outlet and you're just working harder. You are literally running on a hamster wheel, faster and faster and faster. And so where people get stuck is not having the kind of support to get off the hamster wheel. And this is a huge trap, especially for smart, busy women, because we get things done. We solve problems. If it's not working, we go in there, we do it again, and we try harder. And if you don't know what you don't know, if you don't know there's another way, you're trapped.
What you just described to me, and I can relate to this so much, is like the prove it mentality. Like, I'll prove it to you. You haven't seen hard. I got this. I'm going to keep going. And it truly is what kept me stuck for decades in diet culture and really self-loathing. It was like,
It shouldn't be hard. We had a fun conversation inside your missing piece a while ago about your relationship with food. Somebody was talking about cheat days and somebody else said, okay, wait a minute. I just have to say, why would I want a relationship with food that I wanted to cheat on?
Yeah.
Why would I want that? And we had started the whole conversation with this whole willpower thing. And this is my personal belief. Why would anyone want to build even the most perfect, in air quotes, relationship with food or way of eating that required you to stay in control forever?
Oof.
Like, who wants that?
No.
But we are taught that that's the key. And you're right. If you're like, I'll show you, I'll get an A on this exam, then it's a setup to having to be strong and having to be in control for the rest of your life. And that's miserable.
Yeah. And I think that some people thrive on control because they think they need it or they think they want it. Mm-hmm. Like, I am a controlling person, or people say I'm a control freak, right? Some people thrive off claiming the identity of being in a space of control, where I think it's really empowering to just be in a space of trust. Like, I don't need to control anything because I trust myself. And what I realized with my relationship to food and my body was, wow, I'm trying to control everything through this diet rather than trusting myself with food. I can trust myself. And that was the peanut butter thing again, right? Back to the peanut butter. All roads lead back to the peanut butter. I can trust myself again, because how we do one thing, I think, is how we do many things. And I could see how that was like, oh, I don't trust this. And I don't trust myself in this area. And I don't trust myself in this area. It wasn't just the peanut butter. It got all the blame. But there were so many other areas that had spread into at that point. And it was all about the deeper relationship that I didn't have with myself. I didn't really trust much of myself because I wasn't getting results with the food. So how could I be trusted with anything else?
You know, isn't it interesting? Because it just kind of causes us to be blind to all the other reasons we are supremely trustworthy, and we are not lazy, and we are not lacking in willpower. I mean, that's what I'll ask a client, like, so tell me all the other proof you have in your life that you're lazy. And there is none.
Yes. Well,
I'm not normally a lazy person.
Yeah,
no,
right?
I'm not ever a lazy person. You do hard things in your sleep. This is not the truth. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I was reading on your website where you say that you are the queen of hypothetical questions, which is amazing.
Oh no.
And one of the things is you say, I love to ask, what would you do if? What would you do if? What does this question provide for us? Because I really like this question. What would you do if?
I don't know what it provides for us. It drives my kids crazy. Or used to when they lived at home. I think it is a symptom of, I am just curious. I am always curious. And, you know, it's such a skill that I teach in my programs. It will take you far if you can be curious, especially because I'm a queen of asking hypothetical questions. I'm awful at answering them. And I think it's a wonderful thing to be able to be curious about things you don't really know the answer. I really actually ask questions. I don't have an answer in my head.
Yeah.
I just, yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
I think once you go start asking questions, you become even more curious. And then you're like, what other questions can I ask? What other questions? It becomes, for me, it becomes more, it's not a game. That's not the right word, but it becomes a little bit more playful, a little bit lighter when I stay curious. I did another podcast on my show in the early days called Curiosity is the Cure, because the word cure is in the word curiosity. And I think that we can really heal so much of our hearts and ourselves through just asking curious questions. So love if our listeners are ever in this space of curiosity and not quite sure where to go next, if you say, well, what would you do if ... I think that that is a really powerful question to reclaim your power. Again, going back to that phrase.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, you have a book that's called The Emotional Eating Rescue Plan for Smart Busy Women. What is this about? Why did you write this?
Well, I wrote it a while ago. It is about how to get started with this stuff. Mm. How to rescue yourself from emotional eating. How to start listening to yourself. How to get connected with what the reason is, what's going on. I actually wrote the book before I created the Hidden Hungers Quiz. So there's like different pieces that I talk about that aren't in all the different places. I'm just not that organized. But yeah, it's a step-by-step guide to creating your own peaceful relationship with food.
That's beautiful. I love the word rescue in relation to like throwing yourself a lifesaver, like helping yourself float again, helping yourself kind of like get up and reclaim things on own, not being rescued, but just taking ownership around your life's path, taking ownership around the changes and possibilities and opportunities. And so I really, really love that so much. And then I wanted to ask you about your podcast. Your podcast is called Too Much on Her Plate. Who's it for? What's it about? What's the intention?
Well, it's about what we've been talking about today. So all of my, I mean, you can find me everywhere at Too Much on Her Plate. That's my website. That's the podcast. That's my social media handles. And it's for smart, busy women who have too much on their plate in every sense of the word. Overload, overwhelm, and overeating. I've been doing the podcast for a couple of years now. People always roll their eyes when I say this work is fun, but you know, we've been talking a lot about what you free up and what you liberate when you start looking at things differently. And it is fun. You know, we laugh inside my programs. People are like, oh my gosh, I didn't think this was going to be like this. I thought it was going to join this program and have to give all these things up, right? And so the podcast is a place where I get to share some of what I do and different pieces of what it takes to create freedom from overeating and peace with food.
I love it. That's an incredible show. I'm so, so glad that it's out there. Something I ask a lot of our experts is, what's one thing that our listeners could maybe do today to start leaning into their comeback?
I'm going to just be a broken record. It's practice pausing. What you shouldn't do is create a long to-do list of what you need to do. If you're going to do one thing, pick a couple of times a day to take a deep breath. If it helps, I like to put my hand over my heart because it actually, there's research that just that act relaxes us a little bit. But it also reminds us, oh, I'm in here. I can feel my heart beating, right? But take a breath and just ask yourself, what do I know about what I'm feeling right now?
Yeah.
I talk a lot about rewiring our brain and, you know, brains love to tell us what we don't know and to shut down instantly because we don't know the answer or we can't fix that. But what do I know? What do I know about what I'm feeling? If you're not somebody who has a big vocabulary for feeling words, then maybe what you know is your chest is tight. Yes. Or maybe you know this feels incredibly awkward. Or maybe you know, I'm tired. You know, that is the first step. I just put a reel on Instagram today that's literally, I mean, that is the first step towards self-care.
That is beautiful. I love practicing the pause. I'm so aligned with that. Where can people get more of you in their life? How can they get connected?
Come listen to the podcast, follow it. We love followers. Too Much on Her Plate with Dr. Melissa McCreary. And really come to the website, toomuchonherplate.com. I can give you a link in the show notes for a cheat sheet I have on 30 ways to soothe without food, which I think is helpful. But if you come to the website, there is the quiz that I think everyone can benefit from taking. Also, if you want, I can share a link with you. There's a 5-day free workshop series that I do a few times a year. There's one coming up in the future. It's the 5-day Freedom from Overeating workshop series for smart, busy women. And that is a event where I go live every day teaching, you know, more of this stuff and with action steps. We have homework.
Yes. Yes. Action is necessary.
Yeah. So those are the things that I love to do. And I'd love to share them with anybody who resonates with what we're talking about today.
Amazing. I'm going to put all of your goodies in our show notes so you guys can go there right away after you're done listening to this and click away, start following Dr. Melissa and take the Hidden Hungers quiz, sign up for the workshop. If this is resonating, this is for you. That's why we're here. And I just have two quick closing questions I ask all my guests.
Okay.
The first one is, what is one thing that you love about you?
I love my ability to see possibility.
Yes.
I can always see like, but, and maybe that's the hypothetical, like, what if we did?
That makes me so happy. That's such a great quality to have. And then what does joy feel like in your body?
Joy feels, it's in my stomach and it is this fizzy, bubbly, wonderful kind of feeling. That this isn't a feeling, but it feels like Christmas morning when you used to, when you were little and you would wake up and you were like, is everybody awake? Cause something cool is going to happen. That's what joy feels like.
That's a great way to put it. So good. I love asking that question because it's different for everybody and it's so fun to lean into.
It's a great question. Yeah.
I just want to thank you for being here and sharing your light and your guidance and your expertise. So thank you for your time and your energy today. It's really been a pleasure.
This has been such a fun conversation. Thanks, Heidi.
And to everybody listening, remember, you are safe, you are loved, you are enough. Go out into the world, shine your light bright, and live a limitless life. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for tuning in. If you loved our chat or know someone who would, take a quick screenshot and share it now, or leave a 5-star review so this message can reach the masses. Let's continue connecting over on Instagram at Divorce Comeback Coach, or go to divorcecomebackcoach.com to start coordinating your comeback today. You can even schedule a free connection call to see if our comeback community and group coaching experience is for you. Tune in next week for another transformational topic. And remember, you are safe, you are loved, you are worthy, you are enough. Take care.